Tara Loughery-Grant here in for Ryan on 2FM. Rita Ora, I will never let you down. Now, last month, it's really hard to believe, but it marked the 25th anniversary of When Harry Met Sally, the movie that many commentators and critics say was the birth of the modern rom-com and ushered in a whole golden era of those kind of genre, those kind of movies. However, the past couple of years, rom-coms seem to have lost their flavour, lost the pizzazz with just about everyone. Studios, writers, actors, us, the audience, and it all seems to just kind of, well, we've fallen out of love with the genre. So is the rom-com really dying a death? If so, why? Can it be saved? The woman with the answers. It's 2FM's Amanda Fellini, who is, Amanda, you're a self-confessed rom-com fan.
I do like a little rom-com from time to time. Absolutely. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
People often
are embarrassed to say they enjoy rom-coms. I'm not, because they are what they are, just like any other film. And if you enjoy certain aspects of it, like When Harry Met Sally is a perfect example of a really great rom-com, and there's nothing wrong with it. Great script writing, great acting, a really great capture of the time as well. So there's nothing wrong with saying you like rom-coms. Be loud and proud about it.
Do you know, it's cute. I do like a little rom-com from time to time. It's almost a line that you'd give to, one of your leads, you know. But tell me, first of all, the type of rom-com that we're talking about, you know.
Yeah, it's a very specific type of rom-com. And say that's a very specific type of movie, because you can have movies that have elements of comedy and romance in them. But a rom-com kind of follows a particular set form, and it has some or all of a set of kind of characteristics. And just to run through them very quickly to give people an idea, and you can apply these, you watch yourself when you're at home and you're looking at a rom-com, and if you have this list in your mind, you'll actually see it. And I'm going to use an example of Bridget Jones's Diary, because I just happened to see that recently, so it's fresh in my head.
Yeah,
so
me too. Okay.
Obviously I had seen it before, but you know yourself, when you're flicking around, you come across a movie like that, you go, oh yeah, I'll just watch this.
Wasn't it a bit like Cornflakes? Have you forgotten how good it was?
It was actually a good one. So these kind of, there's about six or so, and most rom-coms would have some, if not all, of these. So you've the flawed protagonist seeking salvation, Bridget Jones. It needs no explanation there. Poor Bridget had lots of things going wrong in her life, and she wanted to be the perfect lady and have the perfect life and all that. The meet cute, which is very important in the rom-com, and that's when the protagonists, the guy and the girl, end up meeting up for the first time. And when you think about Bridget Jones starring that Christmas party and the jumpers with Colin Firth's character Darcy and everything else,
it was a meet cute.
So that was a particularly good meet cute. Often the meet cute can happen at work or out in the street, or you know, these usual kind of locations, but that was a particularly good one. I felt the false start is when you think there might be something happening and then it all goes horribly wrong. And there was a point there where in Bridget Jones's Diary, after all her dalliance with Hugh Grant's fantastic character, that it looked like her and Colin Firth were going to get together, and then it all went horribly wrong when Hugh Grant's character showed up again. And
when they made the dinner and
the blue soup and everything else. So you had the kind of false start there, and herself and Colin Firth ended up really hating each other again, and it looked like he was off going to marry the posh lawyer that he worked with. And then she had the grand epiphany. She discovered that Hugh Grant had been lying about Colin Firth's character, and all the bad things she thought about him were wrong. So she had, you know, the dash to the party when she discovered that it looked like he was moving to New York and was engaged to this horrible lawyer woman that we all hated. And you also always have to have the supporting cast of friends. You must have the best friend.
They're the chorus. Greek tragedy.
Exactly, the chorus of the Greek tragedy. And Bridget herself had a great couple of friends in her film. And you always find that usually the male character can often have that as well, and the female character.
Actually, that's a good point. I suppose Colin Firth, every time she bumbled and burst into his office, he had his chorus of stiff suits.
Yeah, stiff suits. He didn't really have very many friends, but Bridget's posse more than made up for that. They were particularly amusing. And then the city as a character, it probably doesn't apply quite as much to Bridget Jones's Diary as it would say to a lot of the New York set rom-coms. But in a sense, London was part and parcel of that. It's made it stand out from the American rom-coms. It gave it its identity as well. So the city often plays a character as well as supporting character.
Do you remember that scene where she's wearing the underwear, and she thinks that he has read the diary, and she thinks, oh God, this is it, he's gone again, another bloody false start, except it could be a dead end. So she grabs a cardi, grabs her runners, which I could never see myself doing that. Pants and a little camo, whatever you call it. Capsule out into the snow, never mind the fact that everyone can see and her bum jiggling up the road. It's just not something I'm going to do.
No.
And I can't see many guys doing it either. But anyway, she does that, right? And then she gets to that place where she's in the middle of the street and then professing, and it's all good and it's all clear and it's all cute. But she lived basically around the corner from the equivalent of Oxford Street, which would be, I think, big salary type thing in London. But again, we can suspend that.
Exactly. I mean, obviously, yeah, when you look at some of those New York rom-coms as well, the apartments these people have and the jobs they have, or some of them don't even have jobs. That's part and parcel of their character. Oh, my life is a disaster. I don't have a job, yet I can have this amazing apartment. You do have to suspend the belief there with that.
Definitely. Carrie and Sex and the City was a big one of that.
Exactly.
But what was it about Harry, when Harry met Sally, that made it so special? Was it that iconic scene?
Well, the iconic scene is important, but not in the way that you might think. The reason why When Harry Met Sally is so special, a lot of people compared it to Annie Hall. And obviously, if you put it up against Annie Hall, it might not, you know, compare favourably, depending on your point of view of Woody Allen films. But in itself, in what it started off with, the modern romantic comedy genre, it does stand toe-to-toe with it in that its female character was allowed to have a voice. And that's part and parcel because Nora Ephron, the great late Nora Ephron, wrote it.
I think she was a... rest in peace. She was a great writer.
Absolutely.
Women.
And particularly in this one, more so than any of the others, her male and female characters were equals. It wasn't that one was more important than the other, because it's not important that the female be a better role or more important. It needs to be, for a really good romantic comedy, that you're invested in both of them.
It's really interesting that you say that, right? Because I got to interview her and I really liked her. Really classy lady. I was going to say really classy broad, but she had that thing about it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's what you said there, hit the nail on the head. She said she loved men, she loved women, mm-hmm. and she was a strong woman herself and was able to write. She didn't say this about herself, but she was able to write for both.
Completely. And I mean, When Harry Met Sally is a perfect example of that. And the reason why I say that iconic scene is important is that when you think back to the start of When Harry Met Sally, when they first met and they're driving to New York from Boston or Chicago, wherever it was, that they were in college and they were moving to New York, Harry, as in Billy Crystal's character, has a go at Sally about her sex life and, you know, makes assumptions and judges her on it.
That's right.
And, you know, she is kind of a bit unsure of herself and not quite sure how to take this and a bit insulted and everything else. Years later, they're friends, they're out in this restaurant in New York, he's warbling on about, oh, he knows about women and he knows how to make them feel good in bed and everything else, and then she does that iconic moment where she basically, you know, fakes an orgasm. And that is the reason why, because she is now getting her back on him years later for how he made her feel at that point in the car years before. And that's why it's that equality was there. And that's real life. It's almost like, you know, people change and that friendships grow and all that. And she was a more confident person then. And she let rip at him with this. And he was shocked because he was thinking, everything I thought I knew about women and sex, maybe I don't. And it was just a great moment. And if you actually study that film, it really kind of, you know, turns that moment early on in the car on its head.
And Amanda, like, I still, even the way you're saying that, it's sticking out in my mind. Would I go into a restaurant and make the point? I probably have done it, but maybe with a few lemonades on board and not quite as dramatic as that, right? But also the 25th anniversary. I mean, this is a quarter of a century ago and it's still, we're talking about it.
It's still a great movie and it still actually stands the test of time, primarily because of the banter between them. And it reminds a lot of people who are familiar with the screwball comedies, romantic comedies of the 30s, 40s, Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn, all that era. It reminded them of that. And it did start off a golden age of rom-coms from about, that was 1989, from 1990 onto about the mid-noughties. We had about 15 years of what was a golden era when we had the most beloved and most commercially successful rom-coms of all time. So it did start that off.
Now, it's really interesting, right? Because you know, you're talking about this, you're saying 25 years ago, getting a little bit closer, 80s, 90s. Now, that's all a long time ago. Mm. Did we do that thing that we do? We get a taste of something good and we eat it till we get sick.
Well, I mean, if you look at the rom-coms from the 90s and the noughties, obviously there was lots of really bad ones, mediocre ones, but there were some great ones. And they also made huge superstars of the actors involved. And you think of Julia Roberts, Hugh Grant, Sandra Bullock, Meg Ryan, as we mentioned there, Tom Hanks, Matthew McConaughey, Kate Hudson, all these names, Renee Zellweger that was in Bridget Jones, all these great names that were made superstars because they often started off in rom-coms. And the stuff that they did. The roles were very much beloved. People enjoyed them. They loved the characters. They invested in them, and therefore they invested in them as actors then when they moved on to other things. By the mid-noughties, things started to change. Studios started to think, oh, people must be getting a bit tired of the genre. We've been doing the same old thing over and over again. Yeah. A lot of these top stars that were doing the rom-coms in the early 90s had moved on to bigger and better things. What are we going to do? So it kind of went in two directions. One was the female role became less important, and suddenly it was all about the comedy and the bromances and what was going on between the guys. Think of You, Me and Dupree. That's think right. of
Wedding
Crashers, exactly. A lot of these rom-coms, they spent a lot more time with the guys than they did with the girls. And another thing they did was they became a lot more smutty. When you think of Knocked Up, the 40-year-old version, all these kind of things,
Judd Apatow type films. Sex Tape.
Yes, yeah. The new one that's coming out, Sex Tape. So the rom was replaced by sex, so you have a sex com rather than a rom-com. And again, that appealed more maybe to the guys than the girls. So the studios were thinking this was the way forward. We need to refresh the genre. We need to reinvent it. But that fell flat. And by the mid-noughties and onwards then into the last few years, like just to give you a couple of stats that will show you. In 1997, there were two rom-coms in the year's box office top 20. In 98 and 99, there were three in both those years. Even in 2005, there was five rom-coms that topped $100 million in the global box office. 2012 is the last year that a rom-com did really well, if you can call it rom-com, Silver Linings Playbook. 2013, only last year, there were no rom-coms, not just in the top 20 global box office, not just in the top 50, but in the top 100.
What?
2013 was the year that a lot of people say the rom-com died.
Wow. I can't even, that's amazing when you put it like that. But yeah. You know what, Amanda? Recently, you hit the nail on the head, Silver Linings Playbook, saw it, loved it, Oscars, right? Speeding that line, saw it, loved it, Oscars. Now, what if you have Daniel Radcliffe doing his first ever rom-com and you talked to him about that and host to the Q&A. So it's very much a case of, if we're going to do rom-com, we're doing it differently, or we're bringing it back and doing it a little bit older. You had Diane Keaton, Meryl Streep in a couple recently.
The older ones, yeah. But what's happening with the rom-com now, the reason why it is at the state it is some people believe the audience are tired of the formula. I don't agree with that. I think they're tired of the actors that are in these movies and the scripts. The formula works. We've seen that in the 1990s. The formula isn't the problem. It's what they're doing with the formula is the problem.
I 100% agree.
There's not enough of these movies being made by women. Women know what women want. Nora Ephron proved that. A lot of the really great female directors and writers are working now in television. And as you saw at the Emmys just there on Monday, Judy-Ellen Margulies said in her speech, this is a great time to be a woman on television. The roles that are being written for women are fantastic. We need to see that back in the movies. Audiences are hating on actresses too much these days. That's a thing, a part and parcel of the internet where, you know, people say, oh, I hate Jennifer Lawrence now. You know, suddenly she's not cool anymore. I hate Anne Hathaway. I hate all these actresses. These are the young actresses that have to take on these roles because Meg Ryan, Julia Roberts, all these people are too old now for these
anyone
roles.
Anyone says anything against Jennifer Lawrence, text me 51552. No, but you're right. So basically it's not dead. We just need to.
Well, the big studios are not making rom-coms anymore because they realise that to make money, they need to invest in superheroes and comic book heroes. And because they work in the global box office, they will be big hits. They translate in China, in Russia, in all these, you know, India, all these massive markets. Whereas a little dating movie isn't necessarily going to have the same impact in those markets. So the big studios know that they can't attract the actors either because the big money is in, you know, the kind of the genre, the action movies, the blockbusters. So they are all focused on those kind of movies. But the indie movie directors, the indie movie writers and those actors and actresses that are starting out realise, hey, we can't compete with, you know, Batman versus Superman or whatever, but we can do a really cool little indie romantic comedy and actually make a decent movie out of it. And that's why the indie movie makers are taking over now. And What If is an example of that. 500 Days of Summer started that off back in 2009, which was a great little movie. And that led on to What If and other movies that are coming out over the next couple of years that I've looked at. And most of them are not big studio movies. There's one big studio rom-com coming out. Cameron Crowe's doing a new movie with Bradley Cooper and Emma Roberts or Stone. I can't remember which one of them it is. But that could be a big studio rom-com. But other than that, it's all indie movie makers that are making rom-coms over the next few years.
Who would have thought it that the rom-com becomes the indie movie and the big blockbusters are nearly all for the boys in the terms of the big comic ones. Although we love it too.
We do love it too, in fairness.
Amanda, we can talk to you about this all day about rom-coms, and it's great to hear what direction that they're going with. Thanks so much for coming in and having a chat with us.